You're listening to the Vegans Explore Network, found at vegansexplore.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Vegans Explore podcast. Today, I have Brett Christoffel on the show today. He is the founder and CEO of All Y'all's Foods. And as you can see in the background, I am a big fan of their jerky product. It's jerky, y'all. And I'm so glad to have you on the show.
I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So as always, what we do with our guests is we like to go a deep dive into their journey, find out a little bit about what they're cooking for the vegan movement, what are their motivations. I know you have ties to some charitable causes, so I definitely want us to go into that as well. But let's start off giving our listeners, our viewers, however you're consuming this, let's give them some background into who you are. Just let them know a little bit about yourself. You know, just give them an appetizer before we get into the main course.
Let's see. I grew up in Texas on a meat-centric diet, hunting and fishing, like most folks that I knew. And what started me on this journey was the fact that I'd been on antidepressants for nearly a decade. Now, you have to understand, my diet consisted of fast food, lots of fast food, processed food, meat, dairy, eggs, and diet dreams. That was about it. And I met a guy who said, look, if you will actually nourish your brain, it needs to be fed good fats. That's where there's a lot of mental health issues because people are actually undernourished. In the form of fresh ground flax seeds. And if you'll do that, you can reverse or eliminate bipolar disorder, depression, and ADD. And I was like, and he's not selling anything. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And so I began doing that in a smoothie every morning, along with some greens, fresh greens. And within 4 months' time, I was off all medication, haven't looked back. And I was like, okay, there's something to this. And I attended the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, got my board certification as a drugless practitioner. And then I learned in that process, I met someone who had reversed their stage 4 ovarian cancer through diet alone. And I thought, okay, everything I thought I knew about food and health was wrong. And so I began educating myself, you know, what the health, forks over knives, those kind of things. And on a trip to the zoo, don't hate, on a trip to the zoo, it'll be 10 years ago next week. By the time I got to the elephants, now I forgot to mention I had published a book, Nutritional Truths. And it was about, hey, look, here's why disease happens. Here's how to avoid it. And if it comes calling, here's some solutions that have worked for these people. I interviewed a bunch of people. And when I got to the elephants, it hit me that all animals are present and aware and don't want to die. And I got really physically upset, emotionally, spiritually, everything. And I turned to my wife and said, I'm done eating meat. And it was just that simple. It was like someone flipped a switch. And it wasn't like I came up with this idea. It was just like a knowing all at once. And so from that point forward, I started at pescatarian. I learned that, you know, the seafood industry, you're going to kill off about 20 pounds of critters to get a pound of gold shrimp. And I thought, that's just stupid. So I stopped and went vegetarian. And then I really learned about the egg and dairy industry and went, wait, I'm going vegan. Then I learned that beef is our second largest agricultural export. And that pissed me off. And I said to myself out loud, are you going to bitch about it or are you going to change it? Because, you know, people like to bitch about stuff, which is fine. But I said, I'm going to change it. And so I landed on jerky and I decided, okay, I'm going to have a flavor represent, you know, there's 7 regions of Texas. I'm going to have a flavor represent each region and I want to support an animal sanctuary. So I looked at all the sanctuaries in Texas. There's a lot of really wonderful ones, but the one I found that had the most cows was Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. So I said, we're going to support you and started selling in May of 2018. And to date, we sold over 600,000 bags. We've given Rowdy Girl over $50,000. And I'm here just to delight and nourish the humans, leave the animals be and help care for them as we can. And then from a sustainability standpoint, we use less than 10% of the water, land, and fuel. to produce our proteins that are filled with fiber and phytonutrients rather than cholesterol and saturated animal fat, and give people, you know, a choice to eat better and to do it more consciously.
You went right into the no pun intended, the meat of what we wanted to talk about.
I apologize if I went too long on that.
No. I mean, it's great because now we can just jump right in, because you lay out a lot of important facts about this movement and misconceptions. So I want to take it a piece by piece.
Sure.
And let's chew on it a little bit. I've got a lot more in the belt, ladies and gentlemen. I have a lot of puns ready for this podcast. You're in Texas, right? So one of the big things you hear about Texas, I've personally never been to Texas. I've been to a lot of places. Texas, I'm surprised I haven't been there yet. It's on my list for this year. But you always hear everything's bigger in Texas. You know, you think, you watch shows like Landman, and you just see, you think you understand what Texas is about. It's probably one of the places that people will make the excuse that you can't go vegan because of the culture and because of the lifestyle and everything that's there. Obviously, that's not a case for you and a lot of people that I know. There's a lot of content creators, mm-hmm. people that are doing big things for the movement that are from the state of Texas. So for people who have that mindset, let's just start there. What would you say to them if they're making the excuse that, you know, it's part of our DNA, it's in our blood to, you know, have this lifestyle, it's part of our livelihood, we can't move away from it? What would be your advice to them?
Well, it's called cultural conditioning. In other words, whatever you grow up with and people do around you is normal. You think of all the things that we've done over the last few hundred years that today we'd be like, what? It's cultural conditioning. And I think what a lot of people miss is, you know, they talk about meat. Oh my, you know, I love a good brisket or steak or whatever it is they enjoy. And I get it. I mean, because it's part of tradition. It's kind of who and how we do things. The fact is meat has never, people think, you know, you've got to get meat for protein. We know that's different. That's not true. But they're used to a particular flavor and chew. And the fact is, if they think about it, you take any cut of meat and you don't flavor it with plants, smoke, char, or salt, and you will not eat it. It does not have a good flavor. So for me, it's about educating people on the fact that, you know, yes, it seems normal, but the fact is it's plants that are doing all the heavy lifting. It's not meat itself. You've just been sold it on, you know, protein as it needs to be a meat, you know, plants on a meat vehicle. Well, you can take the vehicle and make it from plants as well and have that same enjoyable experience that you're familiar with that you like. Because I still eat a lot of plant-based meat because I like the way it chews. It's a very satisfying thing. Now, I do work to eat more salads and raw and fresh things. But the fact is I've always liked it. And so I wanted to create a product that matches that. And so I let people know that, you know, try a meal, you know, because here's the thing. There are a lot of people who really come after people who still consume meat. I don't, because I remember what it was like to not be dialed in, if you will. In fact, the first time I heard of Meatless Mondays, I laughed out loud. I was driving in my car, I was in the country and driving in the car, and I thought, I couldn't even think of a meatless snack, and why wouldn't you want to have meat? So you have to meet people where they're at and just give them new ideas on how to rethink things and not attack. And so far, so good.
And you brought up a thing about, I don't even know what the snack, I think you said something to that effect. That is one of the things that frustrates me a little bit, especially the convenience factor of it sometimes when you're out of your comfort zone. I feel like there could be more of a conversation with that. I feel like a big part of what we do at Vegans Explore is we want to set people up for success mm-hmm. when they enter the vegan lifestyle. You may start off and it could be the situation where there's just so many options, you don't even know where to start. It's not like there's a lack of options. It's like you don't know what to do. You don't know what's being, you know, X, Y, Z, especially when you're first getting started. I know that was my thing, right? Luckily for me, we're on a little bit of a tangent here, but luckily for me, what I realized what allowed me to sustain the vegan lifestyle was community, being able to be around others, being able to have that support of being able to ask that real quick question, be like, oh yeah, why didn't I think of that? Yeah, that sort of situation. So I feel like what your product is providing is a solution in terms of something just to snack on. Like, you're on a road trip, you stop into a 7-Eleven, you stop into a convenience store. Like, how great would it be to have at least one vegan jerky option on the shelves, you know, whatever, XYZ gas station, whatever, 7-Eleven just popped into my head. So how has this space developed and evolved since you launched, what you said, 2018? Mm-hmm. How has that snack-based space evolved since you started?
Well, there's a lot more players than there have been, and even more so, there have been more players that have come in that are now gone. And so, again, it's usually about running a company with efficiency, capital efficiency, and a lot of people miss that. And so I think that's part of the problem. It has evolved, and there are even more and better snacks, and some that aren't intentionally vegan, you know, but they are. And so that's good too. So I would say it's gotten better. And I think it'll just continue to improve as more people embrace the fact that there's so many advantages of leaving meat out of the equation, that they can have, again, that satisfaction through chewing and flavor and protein, because you got to have your protein. I think it'll continue to evolve and get even bigger and broader. And we, you know, speaking of 7-Eleven, we did a trial run in all places, Oklahoma City or Tulsa, Oklahoma. We were in 100 of their stores, and they wanted to see how it moved. And it moved fairly well. It didn't move fast enough for them to go, let's make room and keep them. But that was 4 or 5 years ago now. So things continue to change, and we work at getting in different convenience stores, different chains. But our main focus is direct to consumer. But yes, it would be better to be able to grab some plant-based jerky or something else other than nuts, seeds, and fruit at a convenience store.
Is there anything we can do to help support that? Like, is it the sort of thing, like, if we bombard and message, a convenience store in our local community to say, hey, could you at least try it out? Do you think that would have any effect?
Yeah, it definitely can't hurt, especially here in Texas where meat's so popular. I mean, like barbecue restaurants in the U.S., Texas has over 2,000. The next closest state is Florida at 1,000. So again, it's very popular here, the concept of meat. So I would say, yeah, reach out to 7-Eleven, reach out to any of the convenience stores that you frequent or maybe buy your gas at. That can't hurt.
So let's just get into jerky for a moment here. Why jerky of all the snacks and foods? Why did you decide to go that route?
Because I grew up eating lots of jerky. And at the time, the jerky that I found that was plant-based, that was available, I didn't care much for. It was fine. I mean, no complaints. It just wasn't my thing, you know, especially when jerky's wet or something. I'm like, this does not make sense to me. Again, all good products, and they all do very well. It's just nothing that I wanted. So I'm like, you know, I want the flavors that are familiar to me. And I want to have the chew that's familiar to me. And so I worked on that for almost a year before we launched to ensure that, you know, people would get the flavor and chew that was familiar and enjoyable. And so I did that because it was an easy snack, you know, shelf stable. Mm-hmm. The folks who get into refrigerator or frozen, I'm like, oh my gosh, that just scares me. That's not to say it won't be successful. It's just for me. And, but the thing about our product that sets it apart is you can snack it or you can top it, put it on salads, baked potatoes, mac and cheese, whatever, or you can cook with it, stir fries, stroganoff, spring rolls. So it's very versatile. In fact, we even put out a cookbook, but, that's what got me, started on jerky. And then we expanded into bacony bits and cheesy bits. We're currently reformulating those. And, again, there's opportunities where people want to have that same experience you're familiar with, but again, just with plants.
So one of the main criticisms I hear from people whenever you bring up a plant-based alternative in the meat space is the process of it and how it's not natural and how it's a science experiment. What is your response to that?
Okay. Have they worked to kill floor and the butchering process of a living animal? I'd say that's a heck of an experiment. Mm-hmm. The thing is like our product. Now there are some that involve more, magic, if you will, than ours. 'Cause ours, you know, the soybeans are harvested, crushed, cooked, extruded, marinated, baked, and bagged. Mm-hmm. And it's whole non-GMO soybeans, not isolate. So we could run the protein numbers higher, but then we'd have to pull everything else out of it and it'd be less natural, if you will. So I understand the concern there, but the fact is if you look at the process of killing and processing an animal, that would terrify me more because of what's inside that animal. And, you know, it's, I can understand from a marketing perspective how the people on the other side, if you will, would promote that. Oh, this is unnatural. This is unhealthy. And in fact is, if you do, you know, the whole rocks are hard, water's wet perspective, and you look side by side what's involved in each product, the outcome, the output, regardless of what happens before, plants are going to win every single time. Our liver creates plenty of cholesterol. We don't need to ingest any of it.
And that's another big thing in terms of cholesterol. Like, I feel like there's a lot of people, my family, you know, that have pills after pills after pills after pills. And you were testament in your testimony, you mentioned that you were able to get off the pills by switching to a plant-based diet, a lifestyle, rather. Let's go into that a little bit, because I think it's said but not heard, because the whole pharmaceutical world that's out there, I think the amount of money they spend on advertising, it's like, just watch terrestrial television. Every third commercial is an ad for side effects. I don't even say an ad for the pills that they're selling.
And
the side effects are actually longer than the commercial itself.
Yes.
So, like, how do we market as a community, as a movement, that this is an alternative to taking all of these pills, that you're eventually just taking pills to counteract the effects of the other pills? How do you say it in a way that lands, that sticks to, like, hey, let's try it out? Like, what are your thoughts on that, being someone who's actually was able to get off of medication?
Well, first, you have to understand, my come from before was, I trusted explicitly those in the white coats that had been formally educated. And if you had some alternative solution, it was some hippie cure and you were out of your mind and everything else. And now I realize, oh, it's almost the exact opposite, in that what most people don't understand is that Rockefeller, back at the turn of the last century, shortly thereafter, did the Flexner Report. And he had someone go around and investigate all the teaching institutions, all the practitioners of medicine, because they were using at the time holistic means in many ways. And there are those who were technically really quacks who were using all kinds of devices that didn't make any sense. But he essentially crushed everyone who didn't get in lockstep with them with synthetic pharmacology. He owned all the oil. He wanted to bring synthetic pharmacology into medicine, and he did. At one point, all of medicine was 80-something percent was from cannabis, naturally from cannabis and hemp. And so that's the start. You know, if you can get people to understand, look, the healing properties of medicine were mostly taken from us, because there's a lot more money if I can prescribe pills to you, rather than bring your body back to homeostasis by either adding or removing foods, beverages, exposure to things, I'm going to make a lot more money. And so I would invite people to consider, the fact is there are movies that prove this out. Rolf for 30 is one of them, around diabetes, how people were able to reverse their diabetes by shifting their diet, because the body can only do so much and it gets overwhelmed at a point to where these different reactions happen within the body, and you can reverse many of them just by stopping the input of what it is that's causing it, and then cleaning the body, and then nourishing the body. And so I would say, you know, they're like, and What the Health, it lays out, in the movie, it lays out the relationships within organizations and the government and pharma, and calls into question all of them, mostly. And then Forks Over Knives shows how you can reverse disease through a shift in diet. And so I would encourage people to consider that, look, the way we did things isn't the way we need to do things. And, you know, here are these solutions that you can take as far as a shift in choices and what's consumed and what we expose our bodies to that can have a big impact. And I don't know if I got right to the point on that, so forgive me.
No, that was great. That was great.
Yeah.
You mentioned your pedigree behind this. You wrote a book about on this topic. So I definitely appreciate that insight. And even breaking down the connection to Rockefeller, I actually want to go a little bit deeper, maybe into another podcast and kind of lay that out. So thank you for giving me that thread to pull on. But
sure,
it's wild. It's wild how all of these things are related to each other, and the interest, and once again, that could be a whole other podcast. So let's shift from that, because I want this to end on an upbeat. You know, because there's a lot of great things happening, and especially with what you're doing with your product. I see, I looked at your social earlier today and saw you posting videos about the European market. Are you expanding to other places outside the United States? Take us into the global picture for all y'all's food.
Yeah, we've expanded into 10 European countries, including the UK, Italy, France, Spain, Belgium, Germany, etc. And I'll mix a few up. So let's just say there. But you can find us on Amazon there. And that's an opportunity that we started working on back in June that happened late last year, and are excited. Eventually we'll grow into retailers there, but it's nice to get out into other parts of the world, because in Europe, people tend to be 5 to 7 years, I think is what I read. Maybe it's 3 to 5. I don't want to be dishonest, ahead of us when it comes to embracing plant-based options. And so that's a great opportunity. And we focused, you know, we're in doors from New York to LA, but our focus has been, you know, in Texas. And so with the opportunity that presented itself to get into Europe, it was like, it's a no-brainer. So it's exciting to do that and have a presence on a more global scale, because the more we sell, the more we can support Rowdy Girl. And and the more we know that people are getting an option that's enjoyable and it's nourishing rather than harmful.
And I want to eventually, maybe after this question, get a little bit into the business and marketing side of things, because I know there's a lot of people who are part of our community that are business owners that are looking to get into the packaged food space and, you know, expand and grow, especially vendors who are working farmers markets who want to shift into that. So I think there could be a lot of valuable insight in our conversation regarding that. But I wanted to go into the actual product itself. Now, I mentioned before, shout out to John Thomas, the bodybuilding vegan. I worked with him maybe a couple of years back, and he was promoting your product, and I had the opportunity to try and taste a lot of them. And the one thing I will say is, I found myself like consuming the whole bag. it's just such a, and I'm not getting paid, but I'm honestly saying it was a satisfying mouthfeel when you eat it. The flavor wasn't overpowering. I liked the chew of it. And I can't remember which flavor I liked the most, but it was one of those things where it's like, all right, Sean, no, put it down. Save the rest for later. It was like that. So your product is you have a great product.
Thank you very much.
How, in your own words, how would you describe your product and how it differs from other products that people might have tried in a similar space?
I would say that, you know, we've dialed in the flavor and chew such that you get that experience. And while, you know, I tell people compared to the meat, it's an amazing option. Is it as healthy as a salad and a sweet potato? No. But it's close. In fact, our first investor is Dr. Riz. He's a vascular surgeon here in Dallas, a part of the group of responsible medicine. And that proves out to me and to many others that this is a very viable product for a healthier diet. And so, again, it provides that familiarity that people have with jerky, but it's not the kind where you have to park it in your mouth and let it sit until you can chew it. And it's not like a greasy stick that you can buy. It's just, again, a satisfying, meaty chew. And again, with a portion of every bag being sold going to Rowdy Girl, that is a like the cherry on top, if you will.
All right. So I was going to make a segue with cherry on top, but I'll just be forcing it. So I've worked with a few business owners and they're looking to get into that space. And mm-hmm. I've felt their pain. I felt their pain of finding unreliable, processing places to, you know, create the exactly. to package it and, you know, looking for places that, you know, understand the plant-based space and, you know, are going to treat it right and all that stuff. So what was your experience getting started? Because, you know, you have a couple of years underneath your belt since you've launched. So what were some of your growing pains getting started and how did you eventually overcome them, if you had any?
Growing pains, I've had a few. Finding a partner that you can work with that can do the volumes that you can handle, you know, is not easy to find because, you know, one company is going to say we need to do 2,000 pounds at a time. Another company go, we could do 200, you know, so you've got to find the right size co-manufacturer. That's key. The thing is once you move out of the cottage side of the industry, like you're selling at the farmer's market and that, and you're making your product and you're able to do that, there are certain standards that have to be jumped up to be able to put a UPC and sell it without you being there. And so it's a matter of finding referrals from people. That's what I suggest more than anything is find other people in the space who have a bit bigger brand and maybe they do production or maybe they outsource it. Because a production partner means everything. And so I would say, you know, you have to ask around. You can't live in a bubble. You have to reach out to people. And the thing is that I have found, that's been my experience, not completely, okay, but for the majority of people I reach out to ask questions or get a, you know, can you give me some direction here? They do it because they all care about, not all, most of all, about the same outcomes. And we're here because, you know, of our own convictions, our own desire. There are people in the space who are just here to make money, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they're not part of the movement. They don't live the life. They're just making money from being part of it, which is, again, that's fine. That's their business. The thing is there are a lot of people, whether they're coming at it from a compassionate perspective or a health perspective or a sustainability perspective, it doesn't matter. They know that if they help make a difference in the one, it's going to impact all three.
Mm. So now you figure out a partner to fulfill the packaging. How do you actually get people to care about your product? Well, there's so much competition, not even just in the jerky space, but just in the snack food space, especially when you're looking at the online side of it. Mm-hmm. And maybe there may be less inside of the stores if you're able to get into the stores and the convenience stores. But now you're one of 100, maybe 1,000 different options that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
How were you able to break through and get that awareness enough so that you're still here today?
Do you mean specifically within retail or direct to consumer in retail, or
let's start with direct to consumer.
Okay, direct to consumer. It was just about, for me, because I've never done ad spend, that's why we haven't grown fast. Because, you know, when you have limited funds, you can't throw a lot at it to really blow it up. It's just, it's not possible. I'm not saying that people haven't done that. I'm just saying that's not been my experience. So it's really about having a consistent presence on social media. Now, people could also do that themselves in a smaller way. Again, social media is extremely important, but in a farmer's market or that kind of a setting, be there consistently, build relationships with people and ask them to post, you know, tag me in a post, that kind of thing. Give them a free bag of something or something and say, hey, look, would you mind, you know, sharing this? And some people will, some people won't, but some people will. And so for me, it was when I was coming up, it was phone books. What's that? Well, look it up. There were phone books and there were flyers and there were door hangers and there were mailers and regional and national and local publications. But is, you know, with the internet and social media, that's where you show up and that's your storefront. And so between that and a website, I'm big on websites. Other people may not be, but it's important to have a presence there, especially to grow direct to consumers. And also I will add Amazon. Amazon is like the 600-pound gorilla that you don't necessarily love, but you appreciate, you value, and you learn how to play with. And so that requires some fine tuning on numbers. But they've got 100 million people or plus, I don't even know what the numbers are today, in the U.S. alone. And to be there and to do very marginal ad spend is important. But, you know, that's, again, for direct to consumer, those are the paths. And that's a way to get the traction without all the spend.
Let's shift into getting your products on the shelves. I feel like this is the bigger nut to crack for vegan entrepreneurs, not knowing what to do. I know luckily there are a few vegan market or plant-based friendly markets that are out there. I saw a video that looks like you're in Besties. I was out there in
Paradise.
I was out there. So how do you get into those stores? How do you convince them to give you shelf space? What does that process look like?
Well, the fact is when I launched at a street fair, I had a woman approach me who owned the Grapevine Farmers Market. And she said, hey, you know, we'd love to bring your product in our store. I'm like, wow, first retailer when I launched. Perfect. And so that's where it started. Essentially, what you do is you get clear on, and today it's a bit easier than it was then in that, you know, you've got AI assistants and that can help. But you find out who are the vegan shops, where are they, and start there. And usually you just send them samples. So you got the cost of the samples, what it costs you to make them, and then you've got shipping, and then you follow up with them, you know, or maybe include pricing. I don't do that. I just send the product, you know, do you like it? And then almost always, not always, but almost always they reach back out and go, yes, we want to carry you. And then we have it set up on our website, which is built on Shopify. We have a retail side and a wholesale side. So all people have to do is sign up for an account. And then I go in and turn on wholesale and they can access the wholesale side and they can place their orders there. What happened for me, because we're in about 450 plus doors from coast to coast. But what the big thing that happened for me is in Texas, there's a grocery store called HEB. And it was started in 1906 by Florence Butts with $60 and a prayer. And now they're the number one grocery store in America. Now, you've never heard of them if you haven't lived in Texas, and they're in Mexico as well. But they have a contest everywhere, Quest for Texas Best. So I entered one year going, well, I'm a Texan and this is our store and this just makes sense. Well, I was one of the 20 finalists, okay, which was a win into itself because then that means they want you in their store. They believe you'll sell. And then we compete. Now, I didn't come in first. I came in the number one plant-based protein. I was the only plant-based protein, but I was still number one. I came in sixth, but it, you know, of the 20, but 830 companies had entered that year.
Oh.
And since then, we've fluctuated on numbers of stores, or we're currently close to 80 stores now. And now we're on the gluten-free aisle in the healthy living section, not with the jerky, because a meat buyer won't talk to you if you, it's not meat. Why would I carry it? I'm like, because it's a jerky. But anyway, we do well there. And so that was a fortunate thing that there was a hometown team, if you will. And then, to be honest, we have not pursued all the other places you think you'd find us. What people don't understand is normally there is a upfront cost to be in these stores, depending on whose store you're talking about. They're very, you know, Whole Foods is very different than Walmart, but the fact is there's costs associated with it, and different stores want quarterly ad spend. And they, you know, if you're going to do a promotion, that'll cost you tens of thousands of dollars just to have a coupon to do a promotion. So there's some cost in that we haven't pursued. And we haven't even touched that because of the cost of doing business. It's a marketing play. I mean, I'd love to sit here and say, hey, we're in this store, we're in that store, we're in those stores. But you'll find us in dozens of stores throughout Texas, in addition to HEB. Mm-hmm. And then places outside of that. But it's really follow the niche. If you're making a plant-based product and you have it available where you can ship it and sell it without you being present with UPC code and you're registered and all that stuff, then reach out to the paths of least resistance, which would be a natural store or a vegan store, or, you know, place that has a lot of great vegan options, and start there.
As you're saying all of this, something just popped into my head. Yeah. Have you ever thought of going on Shark Tank?
Yeah, and no. No, it's not a play for me. I've gone back and forth with Mark Cuban, and he decided very quickly that after we had communicated back and forth and I'd sent samples, that he thought they weren't nutritionally a fit for what he was up to. And then he invested in pans, and I'm like, seriously? So, but they, again, how a person invests their money or spends their money is their own right. And so I don't have to understand it. It doesn't matter. But yeah, no, that's not my thing.
Gotcha. All right. So as we wind down, I'm learning so much from you. I appreciate you taking the time to share your insight with everyone that's listening and watching this. And as we start to move into the latter part of 2026, yes, I dated it, depending on you're watching this, we're recording this in the earlier part of 2026. What do you see in the future for the vegan movement, and more so in the vegan snack-based CPG movement? Do you see a growth? Do you see things stagnating? What's the current temperature?
I would say there's growth. There's been some ebb and flow since I got in the business, but it will continue to grow because people awareness will continue to grow. Our consciousness among everyone will continue to evolve. And the future's bright. And I know there will be a day where animals are out of the equation completely because they're just not necessary. Plants have pretty much everything we need. And, you know, outside of B12, it's, again, I think awareness and, you know, enough of us are planting seeds as often as we can to enact change and bring more compassion and kindness to the world. And I think it will just continue to grow. And as far as snack options and, you know, straight up meat options made from plants, mycelium, what have you, will just continue to grow and things will continue to get better and mimic more closely their animal outputs. And people will be more accepting. And as time goes by, it just takes time, you know, it just takes time. And so my thing is, you know, do what you can. And be sure and share as much kindness as you possibly can with others, even if they don't get what you're up to. Doesn't matter. I have to remind myself. Sometimes I'm up against it because I'm whatever. Okay, any number of things. And I remember I don't do this because of me. I do this because of all those animals, 100,000 every minute of every day, that don't have a voice and don't get to speak. And so it's not about me. It's about It's about the animals. And so I just stay focused on that. I don't think on that very long because I will get really not happy. And so I just know that I just need to do the next right thing and trust the process.
Mm. And with that, let's let the people who are viewing this know a little bit more about the products. I see you have they're sitting in the background just waiting to be chewed on. can you tell us a little bit about some of the varieties, some of the flavors?
Just sure.
So we can get our mouths watering and where you can go ahead and find them.
All right, cool. Thanks. Well, our biggest seller is the blue bag. It's our black pepper and sea salt. There's no added sugar and 17 grams of protein. And then the prickly pear, if you're not familiar, it's a cactus. And there's fruits on the prickly pear. We use the juice of the fruit because it is the state plant of Texas. And we use that in our prickly pear teriyaki. That's a red bag. And then our prickly pear chipotle, which is an orange bag, which has a little bit of spice to it. The teriyaki does not. It's for people who want mild, that's it. And those are our current three flavors. We have new ones coming out. And we are available on our website, on Amazon, and retailers. If you go to our website, allyallsfoods.com, there's a store locator on the back. And you can see from Hawaii to Europe where we're located. And so you may have a store in your area that you can pick us up, or you can go right to our site. We also have a TikTok shop, and I think even through Instagram and Facebook you can pick us up. But our website is where the most information lives. So I would encourage folks to try that out and go from there. And if they have any questions or anything else, you can reach out through the website. I see those. So, and if I can be a support in being of support, and giving direction or sharing solutions, I'm happy to do so.
Nice. And if you're a fan of the show and you've listened before, you know what's coming up next. The last question, we always like to give the floor to our guest. We call it a moment from the heart, and they get to share a message that's on their heart with you, and that's how we'll end the show. But before we do that, we want to remind you that we are a daily podcast starting November 1st, 2025. I've made the commitment to post every single day to express my commitment to this movement, and we are now, I believe, on episode 96, and we are going to keep going until November 1st, 2026, and then I might take a day off. But we love speaking to people like Brett, finding out the stories of activists, of creators, of business owners that are committed, equally as committed to this movement. So if you're listening to this and you are that person, please reach out to us. We want to tell your story. We want to share what you're up to help hopefully inspire other people to play a role in this community. You can find us at beaconsexplore.com/podcast. You will see all the episodes, where to subscribe. And there's even a feature on the page where you can leave a little 1-minute message. It could be a question to maybe a guest that you know is coming up. It could be a shout out for your business. Whatever you want, we'll be periodically playing those on the episodes as well. So thank you so much for listening. And with that being said, Brett, thank you so much for being a guest on our show. And the floor is yours.
Fantastic. And thank you for having me. Since I get to finish this out, I would say, be kind to yourself. Go easy on yourself. Do what you need to do to make changes that work for you. Don't worry about what other people think. You're on your journey, and just share that kindness with others. Trust the process. And for me, it's about surrendering and looking to do the next right thing. And I seek guidance from the universe on that. And so I would suggest go easy and have fun. And we get one go around on this big ball of mud spinning around in the middle of nowhere. We've lucked out. We won the lottery just by being here. Thank you.